Welcome to the Work-Life Balance Project. Hey everybody, thanks for being here on the Work-Life Balance Project. This is your host, Steven Olson, and I'm super glad you're here. This week's interview is really cool. I had the opportunity to sit down with Tom Clark. Tom is the founder of a company called Banyan, previously Social Dental. The company does reputation management software for healthcare practices. They started about 4 years ago and they have grown through the roof. If you aren't familiar with the startup scene in Utah, the Silicon Slopes, you might not know how big of a deal Tom really is. His company is phenomenal and they've raised capital multiple times and have astronomical growth projections. In addition to founding such a successful company, Tom is also the father of 5 kids ages 5 and under. I'd be incredibly short-sighted to say he does it all by himself because his wife, Sarah, is amazing. In fact, she's also done a few businesses of her own while managing 5 kids ages 5 and under. These two are such a powerhouse couple that we couldn't just interview one of them. So this week, we've got an interview with Tom. And in the weeks ahead, we'll have another interview with his wife, Sarah. So stay tuned for that. For now, let's turn it over to Tom. Tom, thanks so much for being here on the Work-Life Balance Project. We're really glad to have you.
Yeah, dude, I'm stoked. This is good.
Yeah, so can you start off by just telling us a little bit about you?
Yeah, so Tom Clark. So I was the founder of Social Dental that just recently rebranded to Banyan. And we are a reputation management company for healthcare practices. And so we recognize that people are consumerizing their healthcare decisions and looking at reviews and looking at social media, and especially the mommy network is asking questions online. And we wanted every healthcare practice to look personal and real and cool. And yeah, so we started that company 4 years ago and have been growing, you know, pretty crazy every single year. And so now we're where we're at.
And in addition to that, tell me a little bit about your family.
So the family life side. When we started Banyan, so we have 5 kids under five, or five at five.
Yeah.
And so we're super busy. I have an awesome wife. Sarah's amazing. And we've just been just busy. I mean, honestly, I look at the growth rates of our company, and I think our family growth rate is faster than our company.
that's really funny.
So it's been... It's been cool. So I'm stoked to be on this podcast talking about the balance of that stuff, because it's often, you know, I think there's a myth out there that you either serve work or you serve your family. And I think there's times when you feel like that is your only option, right? Because you have to survive. You got to bring money in for the family, but you also, your marriage has to survive and your kids have to survive with you being there. So yeah, it's good. It's exciting to be here.
Yeah. So let's start like, so you and Sarah met and you've been married for how many years?
Oh, she's going to kill me. I think 7 or 8.
I think I heard her say 7.
Did she say 7?
Okay. Go 7.
7 years, I think. Safe.
And so you had your first kid how many years after you got married?
It's funny because when we got married, we're like, we're going to travel. You know, we're going to be just have fun and go do all this stuff. And I mean, it was like 2.5 months later, we were pregnant. And total surprise. And
were you still in school?
I went to college for about 6 weeks and then I dropped out.
Oh, nice.
So, so I was actually on to a second company I started with my dad and my brothers. Really cool. It was an e-commerce online store for dental practices to buy supplies and stuff. And so, and it's actually still running today and really cool company. But yeah, so we got pregnant fast and it was like, dadgum. Like, what are we gonna, I guess we're not traveling. I guess we're gonna have a bunch of kids. And we fell in love with the concept of being young parents, and we wanted to have our kids quick enough that we could be able to enjoy life with our kids, you know, be at young enough age to have fun, be able to run up the mountain with them or play soccer with them. And so that was the path we kind of pivoted there.
So it was a conscious decision to rapid fire have five kids in a row.
It was after the first pregnancy.
Yeah.
But the first pregnancy was like, what are we doing here? Like, what does this even mean? And but as soon as that baby was born and a couple months in, we're like, dude, this is good for us. You know, we needed that balance of not thinking about what we wanted to do, but be thinking about what does this kid need and what environment are we going to create for this kid? What are the values of our home? And honestly, having kids is very entrepreneurial because you create the life that you want for them, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's, so that's cool. So you kind of play entrepreneur at home, but you also, if you're an entrepreneur, you play entrepreneur at work too.
So. Yeah, that's really interesting. I like that a lot. So your oldest was about one then, is that right? When you started Social Dental?
Yeah, let's see here. February, yeah.
Yeah.
He was about one and a half.
Gotcha.
Is that right? No, about one. Yeah, oh. You're right. 13, yeah.
So walk me through
yeah.
how you started. It sounds like you'd been in dental yeah. already, but how did you start thinking about Social Dental and yeah. decide that you wanted to do your own thing?
Yeah, it was really interesting. So I dropped out of college, left college. My family, my dad was very surprised about that decision. My dad's, you know, 30-year veteran as a dentist, a general dentist. My oldest brother went to dental school, thought that wasn't enough, went to medical school, and then went to specialty school and became a craniofacial surgeon. And then my other brother is a dentist, and my family's like way smart and very educated.
I just blew it.
Yeah. So when I dropped out, my dad's like, what's going on here? You know, like,
so did you drop out because you had the idea of Social Dental?
Or it was a little bit. I mean, I dropped out mainly because I couldn't fall in love with school. And I hear a lot, there's a lot of different articles out there about how, I mean, I'm not here to bash education because I think we all need to be really smart and learn in your own way. I just happened to want to go out and build something. Like, I had this feeling that maybe my ideas are good. Like, could I just try my ideas? And I felt like it was painful to think staying in school for 4 more years and then maybe even 4 more years if I became a dentist. I thought maybe I'd be a dentist. Mm. And so I just said, okay, I'm going to drop out is what it said on my transcript, but I'm going to take a break from school is what I said in my mind, you know? And I went and hung around my dad's office. And my dad does full mouth reconstruction dentistry. So he's taking people that were meth addicts or were in a car accident or genetics had, you know, hurt their smile or whatever situation they're in and gave them a beautiful smile again. And I was in the operatory for the final when they get their teeth moment. And this kid was in there who was, he was a meth addict and turned his life around, totally clean, great guy. Mm-hmm. Had teeth for the first time, and he looked in the mirror and smiled, and like the guy just lost it. Like he was just crying, and just it was emotional. His mom was crying, like my dad was crying who did the surgery, you know. And it was one of those moments that I thought in myself, I'm like, if everybody in my dad's city knew what my dad could do, he'd be the most popular dentist in the world. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. he was changing lives. And so I talked to my dad afterwards and said, why didn't you put that on YouTube? You know what I mean? Like, why didn't you record that? And he's like, Tom, there's HIPAA. Like, we can't take pictures of our patients. It's against the law. I'm like, what? You know, I'm like marketing mind going, this is ridiculous. The government's keeping you from doing this, you know? And I started researching HIPAA and all this stuff. And that's where Social Dental was born, was the idea of a HIPAA compliant way to take video photos and all this stuff. And so I met with an attorney and met with a patent attorney and met with an engineering group. And we said, okay, what's the workflow to be totally HIPAA compliant? Where do we need signatures? How do we do this? And we architected an app, filed a patent, and became the first HIPAA compliant photo sharing app like in the world. And and then we began to go and sell that to dentists. So it was cool for me to go to my dad. And I'm like, every time you have this crazy moment, record it, and then he would put it on his Facebook page or on YouTube, and there'd be like 30 comments of people going, that is amazing, that's so cool. And that virality reaches other people who are in need of that treatment, and it was driving new patients into the office. And so we thought, wow, this is something probably worth quitting my job to go and pursue. And so we did it. took the jump. Yeah.
So I want to paint the picture of kind of that moment. And I mean, yeah. It might not have been a moment. It might have been a point in time. But so your dad thinks you're crazy for dropping out. Oh, yeah. What does your wife Sarah think?
My Sarah is. I come home, and this is so funny that so the time frame was, I drop out, pursue a career, meet Sarah. So she had met me post dropout, and she's wondering. I think she asked me several times when we were dating, like, "What are you gonna do with yourself?" You know, it's like typical. Yeah. Like, this girl's terrified. Like, we're falling in love. She's thinking, "Can I give myself to this guy? Like, is he gonna take care of me?" And I had pursued another. I actually had started another company that was a blog network that later became actually successful, and we'd sold that company. And then it got to this point where it wasn't enough, you know, the cell wasn't big enough for us to retire or do anything crazy, right. You know? And so when I decided to quit working with my dad and my brothers, because I was helping my dad in his clinic and with his store, my wife was actually surprisingly crazy supportive. Hmm. And she was with me at the same table actually that we're sitting at right now, drawing the first design of the app. You know, I was like, what if I had a button here? And like, you know, and like concepting it out. And she said, you know what? I trust you. And I was lucky because not everybody has, you know, a spouse that can trust that, because we were going to leave a good job to go do something. And, mm-hmm. But when I left my brothers and my dad, that was a shock for them, because we kind of have the family that's like, this is a family business, you know, like right. You're supposed to stay here. So it was a little bit dramatic. I'm pretty sure my dad told me, like, when this doesn't work out, look forward to interviewing you again, you know, like one of those, like, thanks dad, you know, but we followed the, you know, you get that, I don't know, rush or feeling of like, I know this is something, you know, mm-hmm. And I think the feeling was, I'm going to have crazy regret if I don't pursue this right now.
Yeah.
You know, like, even if it crashes and burns, we run out of money, you're like, I just have to do it now while we're young.
So, yeah, that's amazing that Sarah's on board for that. I think, you know, I talk to a lot of people that want to start companies or that want to take risks similar to that, right? And right. They feel like, if I don't do it now, it's not going to get done.
Yeah.
And that's really worrisome, right? But on the other side of it, it's like, but what if it doesn't work and I have no money and we can't support a family? Like, was that a concern?
That's always the biggest concern. We in society, we think failure is a bad thing, and failure is actually like a great thing, because it's the ultimate teacher. I tend to think, if you're not failing at something, you're not pushing hard enough. You're not thinking big enough. And I love the phrase that's like, if you can think of how to do something, then it's not really going to be that impactful. Mm-hmm. But when you have to face something that's like, dude, this is risky. It's different. It's going to require my wife and us to come together and commit that we're going to do this. But the reward is big. It could be really cool. It could be something game changing for our family or for the community or for the industry. That stuff's awesome. And so you just go into it knowing there's a huge chance of you failing, and the stats are all against you, right? It's like, they share all this stuff, right? I don't know what it is. One in whatever many companies fail in the mm-hmm. first year or whatever. And then right. like, there's all these bad stats, but there's also these amazing stats that we wouldn't have the great companies we have if those people didn't take the risk. I also would say, don't go into it naive. We had a little bit of cash savings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we mapped it out and said, this is where we're willing to risk. I think I was more on the side of like, if this burns up, whatever.
Sarah's on board. You drop out. You decide you're going to go with this. What's it like? I mean, everybody knows that startups are grueling. You're working a ton. What's it like for you and your family?
For me, it's so funny. I can go back to like the very moment. Like, I remember the first day you wake up and you don't have a job. You are literally, and you don't have a, a product. You don't have, like, you have a concept, you have an idea, and so you go to work. I remember the first thing I did was I went to Walmart and bought a whiteboard, and I knew that I thought better on a whiteboard, you know. And then I bought like pens and paper, and like, I'm like, it was like first day of school, you know. I'm like, what am I? I'm such a dork. What am I doing, you know? And then I go back to this little, we rented a, it wasn't even an office. It was a closet, honestly, in a building. It had no windows. And like, it was the smallest thing. And I had a fold up desk that was the plastic desks or whatever. And I drill in this whiteboard into the walls. I'm sure I wasn't even supposed to. And I get these markers. I remember I forgot to buy an eraser for the dry erase markers. I'm like easing my shirt and like, I'm just mapping. I went in there and I just mapped it out. And I, it was funny because the first couple of days Sarah would come visit and bring lunch, like, hey buddy, how's work going, you know? And I'm like, it's going great. I'm just like by myself, like nothing's happening. So it's like amazing, right? It's like this rush of like, I'm free. I can do what I want. And at that time you have a little bit of money in the bank. So you feel like maybe I'll go out to eat lunch right now. Man, my phone's not ringing because I don't have a boss. And it's like, wow, this is great. And then you get down the road 2-3 months and it starts getting real. You start going, wow, I really can't eat lunch right now. There is no lunch for me. The kids are going to wear this size of clothes for the rest of their lives because we're not going to buy clothes anymore. And it just is one of those like amazing times where you find yourself. And I think my path was funny because I mapped it all out, and then I hired a developer on contract that was someone I knew from college, if you believe it or not, for those 6 weeks. He never left his dorm room. So it was the kid that was in there the whole time coding. And so I was like, he's the only guy I know. So I bring him in and he starts coding the app, and he's like, this is going to be like 3 months before you have anything. And I'm like, 3 months? Holy cow. We can't exist in 3 months if we don't have something. And so I had all the UI, like the design. And so I went to Kinko's and printed out like flyers, this what this app looks like. And And I flew down to a conference in Texas, and everything was riding on this. Like, this was actually kind of like a really critical moment for us because we didn't have tech. We had an idea. I was paying this guy money. I wasn't paying myself. And I'm like, I have to just sell this thing, you know? And I get down there and I bring my table from my office, the plastic one. I set it up, put a sheet on it, and I throw all these little sheets of paper, and dentists are walking by, and I'm like, hey, like, come here. I'm like, look at this. And what do you think about an app that does this? And I'm selling them on it. They go, dude, that's amazing. Like, that's a cool idea, you know? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, I want it. Let's do it. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, he wants to buy it. And in the rush of that, I didn't bring anything to slide credit cards. Like, I had no idea how to like take payment from this guy. And so I'm like, and so I turned my paper over, and then I realized I don't have a price. Like, I have no idea what this guy wants to pay, you know? And he's like, how much is this? And I said, well, what do you think it is? You know, like, what do you think we should pay? And he kind of looks at me like, what, is this a game, you know, a sales game? And he goes, I don't know. I'd pay like $3,000 a year for this. I'm like, perfect. That's it. That's the one. You guessed it, you know?
That's what it costs.
That's exactly what it costs. And so I flipped the paper over. And
did you even know if that was
I had no
good
idea.
For you?
Yeah.
That could be a loss.
It could whatever. Be. I think at that time, I'm like, all I'm doing is losing money, you know? So any money in is good at this point. So I flipped the paper over and grab a pen. And I'm like, can you just write your name? I'm thinking, what else do I need? Oh, put your credit card number down and all this stuff. And he's like, is this safe? Like, he asked me. And I'm like, oh yeah, 100%. So he just goes with it and he writes his credit card down, and the guy walks away, and I fold the sheet up. I'm like, this is insane. I did this, and or that he bought it, you know, and I sold 10 or 12, I think it was 10 other dentists at that show. So we raised $30,000 like that weekend. And then the big test was, holy crap, how are we gonna fulfill on this? Cause I didn't have a product for a couple months. And so we just, oh, it was crazy. Got one of my buddies to quit his job and come be involved. And we finally got a product, and then we just started selling. And it was you know, my, our journey was, we were so fortunate. I look back and go, that's not typical at all. It was cool.
You mentioned that Sarah was helping you design things, and
yeah.
What other role did your family play? Like,
yeah.
How did that help you?
Yeah.
Or hold you back, either one?
Yeah, this is the stuff. I'm glad you asked the question, because you always look at a company's success and you look at who's the founder of that or who's the CEO of that company or whatever it is. And what's sad about the spotlight being on them is behind the scenes, there is a wife or a support group or, you know what I mean, investors, mm-hmm. or whoever it is that helped that person in the hardest times. And so there are so many times where I told Sarah, like, I'm losing faith in myself. I don't know, you know, like, I have no outside validation. We're not selling. I'm in this closet. You know, it's like, what is going on? But she was the one that said, I believe in you. We're going to do this. Go out of the house, like, go to work, you know, and get doing this. And there's, you know, your wife should be the one that you come home and you cry with. You're okay to be vulnerable with. I'm really open with my wife about everything going on in the business, open to her about how I'm thinking through things. She helps me make decisions, helps me kind of level set. Like, it's good to have a sounding board,
mm-hmm.
you know, because there's times where she's like, you're crazy. Like, yeah. don't think like that. You're overthinking it. You're crazy, you know? And there's times where she's like, no, you're right. That's a good point. Or so you need to have that mutual person. And probably the analogy is, you know, you think about the boxing ring. You feel like it's a solo sport. You go in there and, you know, you see these guys that are boxing and stuff. But when the round's done or the day's done, you go back to the corner and you got that person who's like wiping you off, going, like, teaching you, like, hey, you got to do this. You got to do this. Like, you want to have that person in your corner. And yeah. Sarah was definitely that. And yeah, and I'm lucky to have that. It's super lonely being an entrepreneur. I talk to entrepreneurs, several of them every day, that just want to talk. Imagine, you know, if you have your employees, it's hard to talk to your employees about the fact that the company might not make payroll.
Right.
Or talk to them about whatever's, you know, could affect their lives, because you don't want to hurt them. You also want to be totally transparent with your employees, but there's you need to have your group that helps you make good decisions in privacy and do that. Mm-hmm. So that's the role she played, was this incredible in the corner, like, I got your back, but I'm going to hold you to a standard, you know?
Right.
Wives are good that way.
And she's awesome. I mean, she's done yeah. some entrepreneurial stuff herself, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah, she's got a successful business. And
yeah, it's phenomenal. You guys are incredible. Do you think, is she sort of entrepreneurial because you have been? Like, did she catch the virus? Or do you think that's always just been something that she wants to do as well?
I think she's always had it in her, because I remember when we were dating, one of the coolest things about Sarah, when we were dating, I'd say, what's so cool about you is that I feel like I can dream freely with you. Like, there was never a hesitation of like, well, how are you going to do that? Or that's going to take money, or blah, blah, blah. It was, we literally would hang out on a hammock or be in the car late or whatever and just dream. What about this? And she would add stuff. Oh my gosh. And what if it did this? And whoa, we could do that. And we could do that. And the high amount of entrepreneurial, just free thinking and dreaming, made me feel like free.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was the coolest thing that someone would allow me to dream. And I needed that. I'm the type of person that I need to have an out, because I think all the time and I observe things. And she allowed me to be a free thinker. But she was also a free thinker herself. And she came up with all the concepts for her business. We're both different, though. We're different yeah. types of entrepreneurs. But
right. But
still very, you have to give each other... You have to give each other the chance to dream.
At the same time, though, you've got little kids running around, a bunch of kids.
Yeah, totally.
So how on earth
do you do that? Yeah.
Most people don't even function with five kids under five, but you're doing it while running a business, and running a business. So how does that even work?
So the way it's worked for us, and I'm sure there's other people that have, everybody has their own way. So this is something that I would say is, and such is with life, any advice is worth as good as it is to whoever thinks it is good. You know what I mean? It's like, there's no like, this is the golden rule with this mm-hmm. stuff. For Sarah and I, what we did is we sat down, and you're very self-aware that work will pull you away from family. And especially as the company was growing, when it grows, it needs more time. But when you don't have money to buy resources or hire people, you're the one. right? So you end up wearing 7 hats or 10 hats. You're doing all these things. And so we would come back at the end of the day or a trip, and it reached a point where we were in crisis. Sarah's like, we can't do this. Like, this is too much. We've got to change something or fix something.
Just as in you're working too much.
Yeah, I was working too much, away from the kids. She needed me. I needed to be home. I was wearing thin. You know what I mean? I was just, I wasn't able to be myself and on my game and stressed and all this stuff. So we came together and we took out a couple pieces of paper, and the thought came to us that we need to talk about what are our non-negotiables.
Mm-hmm.
What are the, you know the analogy where you have a jar and they say, put your boulders in first, the bigger rocks first, and then you put your smaller rocks in, and then you pour sand in to fill in all the rest of the gaps. Yeah. So in our scenario, it was, what are the big rocks? What are the non-negotiables? We defined what our non-negotiables were, which was, I'm going to give you 3 super late nights at work, but I need you home. Because what was happening is I would leave early, come home late. So I'd leave early enough that the kids weren't awake. Yeah. I would come home and the kids were in bed.
Right.
So essentially I was not leaving, but I wouldn't see my kids for like days on end. Like mm-hmm. that was unhealthy for us. And so we said, okay, you get 2 or 3 late nights a week, but these are the days that it's just non-negotiable. Now, you have to have a little bit of movement, even though it's called non-negotiable. If there's a huge contract that's going to be closed or something, let's give some headway and we'll move it around. Okay, now it's Tuesday and Thursday that you need to be home, right? Mm-hmm. But the principle was, put first things first. And so we started doing that. So non-negotiables were super important for us. We also started finding out, what are things that we don't want to spend our time doing? Some of those were, for instance, even this is crazy, even when we didn't have a ton of money, we had a yard that we had to take care of. And we found a neighbor boy that would mow our yard. And it sounds crazy, but that saved me like 2.5 hours or whatever it was of yard work on a Saturday or on a Friday or whenever we did it.
Right.
That allowed me to be more with the kids and the family. We made sure that date night once a week happened. And so those were the things you kind of have to do. But also, we talked about this earlier, it's a rhythm. Everything has a stage and a time. So when you're, let's say you're $500,000 or less in revenue, that's a hard stage. You have to build the company. Your wife and your family needs to know that you're not probably going to be at everything.
Mm-hmm.
But you can set a goal and say, babe, when I'm north of 500, when we get to the couple million stage in revenue or whatever it is, maybe that will buy me some time. And so you set these, like, these are the milestones. These are goals that we're setting. And if we hit this, it allows us to do this. But you have to have good communication, because worst part of being an entrepreneur is you sometimes overpromise. I'll be here, I promise. Then you're like on a flight.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Because you're always chasing the money.
Yeah.
And even though you have good intentions to be here, it's like if that opportunity comes up, you go that direction. So you just have to... It's a really difficult thing. That's why I love that you're doing this podcast, is, God, maybe all of our advice at one point will help everyone figure out how to have that balance, right?
Yeah, that's the hope. How, obviously you've had multiple iterations of it in your family, but right now, how would you define work-life balance?
I think for me to be successful, so I look at it as being successful. How are you successful at home? What does that mean? How do you define success? And sometimes at work, we talk about, what does it mean to win? Because it's different for everybody. And so the way we define success at home is, Sarah and I sit down and I ask her, what am I doing that's driving you nuts? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, is my schedule nuts? One of the big things for Sarah is, before you leave for work, no matter what time it is, or I don't care if you're flying out early or whatever, all the garbage is in the house need to be, take them out. Because we got young kids and we got diapers, It smells bad, right? When you wake up. Sitting down with your spouse and defining what success is on a daily basis. So I told her, I'm like, babe, I'm ADD. Like, give me a chore list. Tell me what I need to do every day that is meaningful for you, that you feel like I'm connected to you, whether I'm afar or here or wherever. And then on a weekly basis, what does that look like? On a monthly basis, what does that look like? And so that's how we look at it, and we measure ourselves and we hold each other accountable. Like, if I didn't take the garbage out, she lets me know. I mm-hmm. get the text message. I'm like, shiz, dang it, should have done that. And then at work, everyone says, okay, why do you build a company? Why do you make money? What's the value of money to you? What's the end game? And for Sarah and I, money does nothing other than afford us time, because time is the most expensive commodity that we have.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We just don't have enough time, and you can't create more time. You can't buy more time.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, one of the big things we understand is, if I can work, you know, lights out, crazy at work, I know that that will afford us to go on a longer vacation or to take a Friday off. The definition of success at work, you know, obviously we have key performance indicators, we have board meetings, and, you know, now I'm you know, the chairman of the board on my company. We just brought a CEO in. So success is defined as, you know, internally with all these other metrics. But success for me is that I'm achieving all those metrics and beyond. I've always been the, like, extra 10%. Like, my dad's the type that's like, if I didn't do the job and more, he'd like kick me in the butt, you know? Mm-hmm. Be like, dude, you're lazy, you know?
Yeah, like, exactly.
I always just try to kill it at work so that I can win at home. And make sure you communicate that with your wife too. Like, if you're going to have a horrible week and you're starting to feel like, I don't think I'm going to be able to give you the days I said I was going to, or I can't go to those baby appointments or whatever, don't do it the day of. Really be a forward communicator to her and treat her like someone at work. Like, if I can't make a marketing meeting and they expect me to be there on Tuesday, and you know, today's whatever day it is, I'm going to let that, as soon as I find out I can't be in that meeting, I let that person know. At home, for whatever reason, we don't do that.
Yeah, like, that's a really good point.
We're like really bad communicators about our schedule. We need next time to be like, oh, this came up. Wife, send her a text. Hey, I just heard this in a meeting. That might affect these three events. I'm just letting you know.
Right.
Now, it's not a cool text message for her to get that we're not going to be able to do those things, but it's way better than...
Yeah, you know, setting that expectation is huge. I found that as well with Hannah, that it's all about setting the expectation, and that'll kind of dictate how things play out later.
Totally. You want to treat your wife way better than you do your employees.
That's a fantastic point. Yeah. I really like what you said. I think that's great. And the ability to be flexible, but also knowing what things are more and less flexible. I think when people hear the word work-life balance, they get this misconception that it has to be, you know, 50-50, or it has all the time, right? It has to be regularly balanced on a daily basis or something, or that they don't, you know, that they're two ends of a spectrum. They're two sides of a scale. And if one weighs too hard, then the other one doesn't get enough. So some people choose to really separate their work and their family. They don't let them cross over. And I kind of feel like, as an entrepreneur, that's almost impossible, right? Like, your life and your family are kind of the same.
Yeah.
Thing. Do you see that play out? Like,
absolutely. No, absolutely. And I think it's very difficult to canonize it. It's very difficult to say, this is what you need to do and this is what you need to do. And I hate tying it to time. I hate when people are like, work-life balance is starting at 8 and coming home at 5.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. Like, start a business. Yeah, you know what I mean? Launch that business 8 to 5. You know what I mean? You tell me how good it does. But it comes down to the higher principle of, how can you work as a team with your wife to accomplish all of the non-negotiables, all the things that make your family successful in a day? Because my wife, one of the rules she has, she goes, I don't care when I fall asleep, if you choose, you can work whenever you want or get up as early as you want. But we got to spend the last hour together without technology. You can't do that, right? And so those things are okay, but what is the hour of that? You know what I mean? And am I going to be home at 5 or all this? You cannot. That stuff is unrealistic. And here's what's hard. What's hard is, you may have neighbors that their spouse does really well. They have a boat and they go on vacations, and he comes home at 4 and he has Fridays off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm so fortunate to have Sarah that doesn't care about that, right? She's immune to that. But those are real social pressures.
Oh, yeah.
When can we do that? When are we going to be like that? So you cannot compare what success is, you know, for your family. And work-life balance, I don't know. Maybe I'm rambling, but the high principle the higher principle of this is, can you work with your wife to create the life that you two want? And can you not be defined by what the world or other people say is this or that? But how do you start a company, follow your heart, do what you dream to do, raise your kids, love your spouse, go on vacations, follow your heart's desires, become everything that you want to become without ruining your company, your relationship with your spouse, relationship with your kids, relationship with your neighbors, relationship with God, whatever it is? How do you do that? And that's comes down to the principle of coming together, making a plan. No one's going to fit the template. If you put me in a box, you know, if someone said you got an 8-to-5, it sounds bad. I just can't play by those rules.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's just a hard, yeah, it's difficult.
I think it's a really healthy perspective that you have on it, that, and clearly Banyan, it's driven by an awesome mission, and like, yeah, your experience of yeah, getting the idea to start it, I mean, that is, it's real and it impacts people in such a positive way. And so that motivates you. But on top of that, there's also, you want to build the life you want for your family.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that's awesome that it's driven by two visions that are really inspiring and that yeah, can keep you going when it's maybe not so easy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you feel like any of your, so you have investors in your, yep, company,
yeah,
right? And you just said you brought on a new CEO, and
yeah,
you have, I think you told me 80 employees now,
yeah,
right?
We're right around.
Or you're going to be at 80 employees.
We'll be at 80
soon,
by the end of the year. Yeah.
So that's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like people make comments like doubt you for being able to handle both your work and your family, or maybe
yeah,
assume that you're going to have to let go of one eventually?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So two things. You mentioned about, like, you know, creating this life and being passionate and stuff. It's really important for me, I should say, that we look at ourselves as creators, that we are people that are totally capable of dreaming about something and making that dream come true. And that it's not like a prayer that makes it come true. I mean, we're assisted. I have someone of faith and believe that, but kind of pray as if it all depends on, you know, somebody else, but then you work as if it all depends on you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm a big believer in being someone that wants to create their life. Like, you cannot live by default. You have to say, okay, I'm going to challenge this. How do we do this? And whatever. Yeah. You're going to face adversity when your company at different stages. When you first start the company, people say, oh, it's not going to work. And then you'll have your fan base that's like, it's going to work. Yay. And that's usually like your family. And like, secretly, they're probably like, I hope it doesn't, you know? And then the company will get some traction and everyone's like, it's going to work. I told them it would, you know, everyone's switching sides. I knew it was going to work. Right. And then you reach different stages where maybe you have investors in your company. And my investors are fantastic. Like, I'm super grateful to have them. Great relationship, real motivator, positive. But, you know, you got to hit certain goals. When investors come in, you got to grow. They gave us money to have a piece of the company, and we got to grow the business for them to get a return. So you face all these pressures, and you will always experience people saying, you can't, or there's no way, or how are you going to do that, or whatever it is. I do think it's really important that when you're running a company, you realize that you're in charge of a lot of people's lives, and there's times where you have to be at work really, really late, really, really crazy. And just, again, communicating to your wife that, hey, you know, if we have 80 or 100 employees and they have 3 or 4 kids, that's 400 people we're taking care of. It's super important that I don't screw up this quarter. If sales are down or retention's low or whatever's going on, I got to put in the time. And so that takes priority. But good thing is, my wife knows that we have to do that, because if the company suffers, we suffer, everyone suffers. So, but if the company's in great shape, the company affords us time, gives us money, it does all these great things. But yeah, I definitely have learned, haters gonna hate, you know?
That's true.
And just can't listen to them. Definitely can't let it affect you.
Yeah. You touched a little bit on how being married, you think, makes you a better,
yeah,
you know, manager or CEO or whatever.
Yeah.
How do you think being a dad impacts your professional life?
I think it's totally related, and it doesn't mean that someone who doesn't have kids can't be great, but kids push you to a whole new level of patience. From they need you to eat. They need you to read a book when they go to sleep, to brush their teeth, to dress them. They need you emotionally. They need you, you know, physically, lift them up on stuff and help them put their shoes on and all this stuff. And it helps you to learn how to serve. The best leaders in the world are people that look at their employees as better than them, more important than them, and that they need to serve them. I wouldn't have the company I have if I didn't have like amazing employees.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm so lucky. I am so lucky. And you look at it, at this point, I have the largest share of the company, and I have all these employees that go to work that are building this fantastic business that's helping to build the equity value for me and my family. We're also paying them and rewarding them and helping them. And we rolled out an equity plan for all the employees just recently, which is awesome. I wanted them to have that. Having kids allows you to realize what it means to just serve, be patient, be a listener. It's not about you.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I was, you know, you go through these stages. Last year, I'm like, man, I was a prideful leader. Because you just get better and better. But in the present mind last year, you think, okay, I think I'm doing good. But kids refine you. They test you. They push you to your limits. That's why I'm like a huge fan of people having kids.
Yeah.
Because everyone's like, you're crazy. When are you going to find time to yourself? And now I'm like, I want time to myself, yes, but I would way rather be laying on the ground and my kids are tackling me and wrestling me.
Right. Yeah. I don't need to be on a dirt bike
up in the mountains by myself. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I'm
the same way.
Yeah.
Just what you said reminded me. I listened to a speech that Liz Wiseman gave
a
while ago. And
Multipliers, a great book.
Yeah. Yeah. And she said in the speech, she said that parenting is the ultimate form of leadership because it's all by influence. You can't scare your kids. I mean, you can, but that's not healthy, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're not motivated by fear. They're not motivated by getting a bonus at the end of the year, you know?
Totally.
And I think that's really true. And what you said, really, it feels like that, right? Like, your kids, they build you and they refine you and they make you a better leader.
Yeah.
Both as a parent, but also as a
leader
of a company. I think that's really insightful.
No, I think you're right on. There was I don't know who said this quote, but employees leave, they don't leave their job or their work, they leave their boss.
Yeah.
And they leave their manager, they leave a company because they don't feel like they're loved or taken care of and stuff. So that book, Multipliers by Liz Wiseman, we started reading that. That effort was actually led by other people in the company, not me.
Hmm.
And then I later read the book and it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And you're right.
If you had just one piece of advice that you could give to someone who felt like they needed to find a better balance between their work and their life, what would you say?
I would say at the end, there is somebody told me, you know, just imagine this, at the end of your life, you meet up with yourself, the person that you could have become, and you stand face to face in front of the person that you could have been, this person, had you lived up to everything. And you think about that. And so I would say, look at what you're doing right now and multiply it out 10 years, multiply it out 1 year, 5 years, and just say, is this worth it? Does this make sense? Is your wife happy? The number one thing for me is to make sure my wife is safe, she's happy, she's empowered, she's taken care of. Our wives have an amazing barometer for work-life balance. They really do. They got a gift for it. I believe it's every woman and every, just the female, they're just amazing. Like, they're very in tune with it. And I give that advice of like meeting up with that person you could have become, because sometimes we get stubborn and the argument is, I just have to go to work. I just have to get this done, right? I have to do this. We make it look like there's no way out and that the family somehow is creating issues for us getting our work done, when really we need to take inventory of ourselves, make changes, and try it for a couple weeks. Try putting your family first. Try giving them time. I had a thing once where Sarah wanted me to walk in and give my phone to her, and she'd go hide it so I couldn't look at it. And she said, I bet you could last 1 hour. And I'm like, you know, and I found out I totally could. Like, I went back to my phone. I was like, no messages. So usually it's me going into my email. I'm creating my own chaos. It's, you know, my advice is just challenge yourself, be vulnerable, get feedback, make it a safe place that your wife feels like she can actually give you feedback and give you, say the truth, and then take it and live it. Even if deep down you're like, oh, she doesn't understand, or you know, whatever, just own it. And then you'll realize, whoa, she actually does understand. That's my
advice. I think that's phenomenal advice. Thank you so much for being on the Work-Life Balance Project. Really appreciate it. And excited to see where your company goes.
Yeah, this is great. Thanks, man.
I hope you guys pulled away as much from this interview with Tom as I did. You know, honestly, sometimes I think that the Work-Life Balance Project interviews are more for me than they are for anybody else, because I'm struggling to find that balance just like all of you are. And I don't even have half as many kids as Tom and Sarah do. Like I said before, I feel like you can really only come to fully understand what their work-life balance is like by talking with both of them. So, next week, you guys will have the treat to listen to my wife, Hannah, interview Tom's wife, Sarah, and talk about what it's like on the other side of the work-life balance. This is the Work-Life Balance Project, and we'll see you next week. Hey everyone, thanks for sticking around. If you want to tell us about how you manage your work and your family, you can find us on Instagram, at the Work-Life Balance Project. We love hearing about how having a family drives you to be a better professional. Please don't forget to subscribe to our show. We'll be here every week wherever you get your podcasts.